Jennifer, it's very nice to see you.
Pleasure to see you as well.
And Carolyn, that was good drumming. It was super.
Thank you.
Just kept us going. That chant is a vigorous thing. Put everything into it. So that was very cool. Well, we're beginning tonight with Uchiyama Roshi's words. And he has several different subjects that he covers all the way through. One is his own life. And he starts out here with his own life and his terrible suffering. I often forget how deeply the ordinary Japanese people suffered during the Second World War. I mean, my teacher and his family starved almost to the end. It was so difficult. They ate the pumpkin, and then they ate the pumpkin stems, and then they just boiled water. And the mother gave the children everything and didn't take any for herself. And in Uchiyama Roshi's case, he very early became a monk. And he says he was very glad to be a tenzo because he got a little bit of something extra to eat. And even that wasn't nearly enough, of course, for a young man. It must have been pretty bad. And his suffering was even greater because he just couldn't make head or tails out of what he was doing in the monastery. He said it was so annoying, really, and upsetting not to understand what it was all about, and yet he kept on keeping on. Something kept him there. He was ordained as a monk on the very day that war was declared in the Pacific. Boom, just like that. Throughout the entire war, I lived in harsh poverty. So even after the war and settling, so-called, with Koto Sawaki, he just had a terrible time. And things were rough then. I mean, we bombed the daylights out of it, so there wasn't very much left of the country. They had to put it all back together again, and that took a great deal of effort and time. So he tells a story about somebody who was story in here about the fellow who beat Manjushri when he appeared above the pot. That Manjushri appeared in golden and white and everything special, and that's what you're there for, is Manjushri, the wisdom bodhisattva, and the cook is stirring the pot and trying to cook, and here's Manjushri, and beats him up and says, "Get the hell out of here, I'm cooking." "I've got this job to do." And Uchiyama Roshi points out that this is the thing that Dogen is talking about. And when we're cooking, we're cooking. And when we're sitting, we're sitting. We're not doing anything else in the meantime. So I think all through human history, this has been a challenge for us, that it's very hard for us to focus on just one thing and not expect everything to fall apart. I think there's that back in the mind feeling that I've got to keep a track of everything that's going on, and if I don't, I'm keeping the whole world together. And of course, it's not true. And it's, I have three people, three students in my acupuncture treatment. I'm going once a week, and the doctor is observing and teaching them how to put pins in people. And one of them just went to the Goenka to sit up in North Fork and came back after 10 days just floating on air. Just so, he said it was so hard to come back into the world. And he said, I want to be a monk. I just have to be a monk. Because he'd been focusing so intensely on just being the body and mind that he was. It was an enormous treat. He'd never done it before. And it was such a treat for me to hear him, his enthusiasm and his change. He really changed from it. So Uchiyama Roshi says, this idea of concentrating wholly on one thing is the cornerstone of the teachings of Dogen Zenji. This is what's called in Japanese shikan. And so we sit shikan taza, focused sitting, just sitting. Sometimes they say only just sitting. And as you know, when we first sit down, we're cooking things and driving somewhere, and we're planning for tomorrow and doing a lot of many, many little jobs, even though it looks like we're just sitting still. But the longer we sit, the more it all calms down. And as my acupuncturist said at one point, it just all falls off. He said it was so great. So Uchiyama Roshi is talking about shikan taza, which means to just do zazen. But he said we can trace the word zazen back to the Sanskrit word for dhyana and samadhi. Samadhi is sometimes called toji, to hold or see things equally. And sometimes toji, samadhi is sometimes called toji. Another definition of samadhi is that mind and environment are innately one. And finally, samadhi has been defined in this way: the Buddha Dharma should be grasped so that mind and object become one. And we often talk about that, how we see things out there and each thing is its own thing and we're separate and in our own little world. But actually, how we know anything is in here. We're experiencing that chair over there or these flowers in our own body mind. They are alive and well in us. So there are no two things except in our clumsy way of seeing things. But if we relax and allow, we can feel how it's all of a piece of us. Everything that's happening is a part of us. When we think of mind in its ordinary use, we usually think of the psychological mind or conscious awareness. In Sanskrit, mind used in this sense is referred to as citta, in which case the expression shin ikyosho would mean to gather our confused mind together and concentrate on one thing. By definition, Zazen would become some sort of exercise in mental or psychic concentration, or a method for training the mind to attain a state whereby all of one's ideas or thoughts about some object would disappear, leaving the person completely unperturbed. This is the superficial implication of no notion or no thought. Zazen of the Theravada teachings and the non-Buddhist teachings are of this type of psychic concentration. Any method of psychic concentration works from the assumption that our mind is always in disorder and aims to still it by doing Zazen. Dogen Zenji, however, never taught that Zazen was merely a method of working to improve yourself, nor a simplistic straightening out of your own life with no concern for those around you. Dogen once said, "Even if you have the mind of a wily fox, do not practice the Theravada way of trying only to improve yourself." And here there's the translator says the reader must be very careful in reading this passage. On the surface, it appears that Dogen is putting down a Buddhist tradition because it differs from Zen. However, that's not the case. What he cautions against is not any particular sect, but rather that a Theravada attitudes is to be avoided because it does not see life from the broadest perspective. So that's an opinion. It points to the Zen notion of what we're doing is different from the Theravada tradition, and yet Zen is based completely, the foundation of Zen is all of the Theravada teachings, all of the suttas, all of the Buddha stories. That's everything. Everything that we know and practice is coming from that tradition. However, we do have a different way, and he's trying to point out that our way is a little different. He said, in our case, we are transmitting directly from Buddha to Buddha. The mind extends throughout all phenomena, and all phenomena are inseparable from mind. So this notion of the mind as directly transmitted Buddha truth, that each and everything is the Buddha Dharma, and it extends everywhere. There is no limitation, there is no boundary. So when we speak of a Zazen based on the innate oneness of mind and environment, it should not be understood that Zazen is a method of psychic concentration or of trying to still one's mind. It's the opposite. It's the big mind. He says, to talk of our being alive implies at the same time that there is also a world of phenomena in which we live. We assume that the world existed long before we were born, and that our birth is our entrance onto the stage of an already existing world. At the same time, we often assume that our death means our departure from this world, and that after our death, this world continues to exist. Within this way of thinking, a fabrication is taking shape, which is not the actualization of reality itself. The actuality of the world that I live in and experience is not merely a conglomeration of ideas or abstractions. when we look at a cup that's set down between us, we have the feeling that we're looking at the same cup. But actually, that's not so. And this is so interesting when we really begin to quietly consider what our situation is and how things do appear to us and how we do experience them. I often remember how my mother got interested in drawing and painting, and she took the whole family out one day to a park and set us all to draw and paint the same subject. And there were five of us, and there were five completely different pictures when we finished, even though we were looking at the same thing. I think that's what Uchiyama Roshi is talking about. So in that sense, each one of us is a world. And each one of us, I always think I am so happy that the people I know are in my world, and I am in their world. It's wonderful that way. He said, "My true self lives in reality, and the world I experience is one I alone can experience, and not one anyone else can experience along with me. To express this as precisely as possible, as I am born, I simultaneously give birth to the world I experience. I live out my life along with that world, and at my death, the world I experience also dies." From the standpoint of reality, my own life experience, which equals mind, and reality, meaning things, phenomena, dharma, can never be abstractly separated from each other. They're identical. There's just this. There isn't anything else. But to conclude that everything must be in my mind is to fall into another trap. To conclude that mind is totally dependent on the environment would be relegating mind to a naive realism, he says. The teachings of Buddhism are neither a simplistic idealism nor some sort of environmentalism. So what is he getting at? What is this mind? Citta. He said, "The mind that has been transmitted directly from Buddha to Buddha is that mind which extends throughout all phenomena, and all phenomena are inseparable from that mind." The use of the word mind goes far beyond having only a mental or psychological meaning. In our age, perhaps pure life would be a clearer expression than mind. In the course of things, I encounter a world of phenomena, and it is through those encounters and my experience of them that I live out my life. In other words, as Suzuki Roshi said, we meet Buddha everywhere we go. It's just Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. He says, "The Dharma should be grasped so that mind and object become one, means that we must see all of the worlds that our lives encompass from the foundation of our own personal life experience. Our life experience is our mind. This means that all things in life function as parts of our bodies. This is also the meaning of Toji, holding all things equally. So he says, Dogen then did not intend that we get rid of all delusions and fantasies or thoughts that come into our heads during Zazen. Yet if we go about pursuing these thoughts, we're sitting in the Zazen posture thinking and not actually just doing Zazen. Trying to get rid of our thoughts is just another form of fantasy. Zazen, understood as mind, being innately one with all phenomena, is a means of seeing all things from the foundation of pure life, wherein we give up both pursuing thought and trying to chase it away. Then we see everything that arises as the scenery of our lives. We let arise whatever arises and allow to fall away whatever falls away. So that's just about the whole of what he is expressing in this first chapter. He said the most important thing to bear in mind when practicing Zazen is to completely let go of everything. Since secretion, he says, the mind is secreting thoughts all the time, and it's just natural. So just let it be what it wants to be. It squirts out all these silly things. But just to be the body, just to be the mind, the wholeness of it. So he quotes Dogen, sitting is the practice of the reality of life. Sitting is non-activity. This is the true form of the self. Outside of this, there is nowhere to search for the Buddha Dharma. Other questions? Comments?
Can you repeat that last bit? Outside of there's...
Outside of sitting is non-activity. This is the true form of the self. And he has a capital S for the self. Outside of this, there is nowhere to search for the Buddha Dharma. Peculiar thing, isn't it? It's really kind of strange. And yet, a man came to talk to me about windows yesterday and sat down to write out a form and started talking about his understanding of life. And before we knew it, we were talking about the same thing, and he was talking from the Christian point of view, and he said, but I understand Buddhism. He said, I have friends, so I know what it's all about. And it was a remarkable conversation and went on for a long time. So, and yet we both agreed that it was also very strange. This life, that once you begin to go inside, which is what he called it, that you begin to see how huge it is and how mysterious. Wendy?
Talks a lot about not holding on to your ideas. So what about emotions that you bring to the chair? I know you called them weather. So they do pass eventually.
They do.
And change.
And sometimes things arise that need attention. Occasionally people end up talking to a therapist because something comes up that is new and bewildering and needs some kind of to be addressed in some way. And that's part of the process, really. It's not that we sit and become utterly equanimous from beginning to end. We start out with a lot of issues and it's well to recognize what arises before we watch it disappear or work with it if it's something to work on, to really notice it and face it if there's something to face.
Well, sometimes it's not in your power to deal with it, but it's concerning someone else.
Oh, that's for sure. Then it's up to you to, depends on the situation. You can avoid the person, you can confront the person, you can make love with the person, or you could do anything. It's your power. And so studying it and understanding it clearly, where the feeling is very important to know. Especially in relationship. Because that person is another one of you. All together. Jennifer?
What if there doesn't seem to be a source behind the emotion? I mean, I've sat with a particular emotion a lot, and I still haven't been able to figure out where it's coming from.
You may never know. A lot of things are implanted in us. Now, our body carries memories from very, very way back in the beginning, and from in our mama's belly, we actually develop memories. So that when a baby is born, it recognizes the parents' voices and immediately sees them and knows them. So I don't think it's possible to know where everything is coming from. But you can just bow to it and say, oh, there you are again. Sometimes it's just what it is. And that's true of relationships too, I think. I think often we just have to bow and say, oh, that's the way it is. And let it be like that. Sometimes it's hard. Caroline?
So I think I just wanted to put out for something about the Theravadins.
Good. I was hoping you would.
Well, just to add another gloss on the... on what you said, a little more specifically, you said it, you know, Zen, all the whole Mahayana and the Tibetan, the Vajrayana, it all comes from early Buddhism. But then Buddhism is so large. I think when I read Dogen or read sometimes the commentaries on Dogen, that what came to China and then what got to Japan was just a very particular view and slice of Theravada. But then this one term gets put, it's really in Theravada itself. There were dozens of different groups that had different early Theravada practice, that had different ideas and views of the world, and some were very, the Sarvastans were very similar to the Mahayana and the Nagarjuna. You know, so it mm-hmm. kind of gets reductive. But yes. I just remember that even from, it really comes down to no matter what practices or like samadhi or jhanas or that the heart of it comes to, or even the Four Noble Truths, it's all about wisdom and compassion. Mm-hmm. And they're both held in the Theravada.
Yes.
There's wisdom and then there's the Metta Sutta. There's
yes.
really brings out. So it's all there.
Exactly. Yes.
So.
And today there are many different flavors of Theravada as well.
And
including
Zen.
Some, and Zen, very much so. Yeah. And some Zen is more like Theravadin, and some Theravadin is more like Zen. So I don't know what this is going to lead to, because the world is getting so small that I think we're all going to know each other better. And maybe not become all the same, but at least appreciate each other more as part of the same story. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yes. Hopefully there won't be religious wars between the Theravada and the Mahayana.
Well,
it happens. Stupid things happen. Unfortunately.
It's happened in the, certainly in the Vajrayana, in this day.
Yes.
The Dalai Lama has to travel with the guard because that other sect, that whichever sect it is, I don't know them that well.
I've forgotten
it's
what it is
what it's
now.
It's not the Kagyu and it's not the Nyingma, because that's the.
They're
one
the
of
good
those
guys.
Is Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
It's somebody else who, another sect that says, no, this is the true Dalai Lama, and we had our Dalai Lama centuries ago got deposed, mm-hmm. or something happened. So.
Yeah, somebody got murdered in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
15 years ago or so.
Right.
It's really ugly.
Really ugly.
Yeah. Disgusting. So next week is Seigaki. And I know you won't be here, alas, but I hope everybody else can come. You won't be here either. But we are going to serve the hungry people of the Santa Clara Valley and the hungry ghosts in the process. So do come if you can. Wendy's been putting out the words, so I hope it does some good.
Right, and if you're able to help out, there's a sign-up sheet, and we could use help setting up beforehand, like 6 o'clock, maybe 2.
I'll be here anyway, I'll help.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be here now.
Okay.
Super. Right. Super. All right.
Please remind us of the play you'll be in.
Oh, you know, I don't really know an awful lot about it yet. There's a rehearsal on Friday, so I'm assuming that after the rehearsal I'll know more. And I will. I'll be sure to let you know. And they'll advertise it, I would think. I don't know.
It is listed in the Insight Meditation IMC newsletter, and that is insightmeditationcenter.org. So they're in Redwood City, and it's a big, complicated website, but you can find it, I think, by searching anyway, events or calendar. So they won't tell you maybe the date, but they'll tell you the date and in November, mid-November.
Something. Yeah, it's 11th, I think. Mm. Well, that may be wrong.
Well, they have a little write-up of it anyway in the there, so.
I should read it.
Yeah, if you don't get their newsletter, you can read it online. The newsletter doesn't tell a whole lot, actually. It just says it's a ceremony and special,
yeah.
And they're going to be these people who talk about women in the early 90s.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out more. Should we do our 1 minute sit?